Picture this. You're new to the world of aviation. You've been drawn in by something you've experienced that fascinated you. Maybe a flight, maybe a type of aircraft, maybe an episode of Air Crash Investigations. In any case, you think you're ready to invest in aviation as an interest or a hobby, but you're not sure where to start. Luckily, there's only one logical answer. Collectors Aircraft Models Australia. They're Australia's largest outlet in die-cast, wooden-carved, and push-fit aircraft models. And they don't just cover commercial flying, but also military, sport, and general aviation too. And while you might have worries as to how long you might have to wait to get the model you want, or maybe you aren't sure how reliable the model is, well, Camos source their stock from leading manufacturers from both within Australia and the world over, regularly receiving updates from manufacturers and suppliers as to what's new and being developed. Oh, and what if you spot an issue with the model you bought? Well, Camos will replace your defective model with a fully intact one with no fuss and no extra charge. So don't wait any longer. Head into Camos and secure your model today. 40 Cranwell Street, Braybrook. There's no reason not to. Aviation never stops. So you know what? We shouldn't either. Since we last had a chat, there's a lot that's happened. Airspace restrictions through the Middle East corridor have put a strain on airlines. COMAC have been given the green light to receive more General Electric goodie bags. The airline review specialist Nonstop Dan encounters an interesting experience on board Kuwait Airways. Oh, and Qantas's Project Sunrise. What is there to know about it? Let's do a deep dive. Oh, and speaking of deep dives, we cannot possibly forget the tragedy that is Air India's 787 crash and how they've apparently falsified maintenance records.
Oh yeah, we definitely need to talk about that.
Wait, Christos? What are you doing here?
Sorry, I got held up at the airport, but I'm back.
Oh, well, welcome back.
It's time to get into it. This is the Radio Runway Podcast.
Hello. Yes. Welcome back, everyone.
A fresh voice. We haven't heard in a while.
What's been happening?
We haven't heard him in a while, have we?
Have you been, mate? You been well?
Good. Oh, good to be back.
Good to have you back
in
the airways.
I want to apologize.
Oh, mate, you know what? We've actually been reserving that just for when you come back.
I want to apologize.
Yes, I've been AFK for a little bit.
Away from Kapodcast.
Away from Kapodcast.
So yes, guys, look, it's not funny, but it's just always coincidence that when you release one episode, something big happens the moment after and you suddenly need to catch up and chat about it again. Mm-hmm. Probably we jump straight into the elephant in the room, which is Air India 171, the flight to London. And I didn't make it very far, did it?
No, I didn't make it very far.
No.
It met a bird. How far did it go?
30 seconds, I think 30 yeah. seconds apparently. Yeah. Immediately after rotating.
But seat 11A, that's the seat to go for.
Seat 11A, yes.
Yes.
I had the opportunity to go on a 787. Coming back from Sydney.
Sick.
Yeah, first time for you as well.
First time.
Yeah. So. Were you in seat 11A?
That was booked out, surprisingly.
Yeah, surprisingly.
Was that before or after AI 171?
After as well.
Oh!
Actually, I'm not too sure. 11F was free, but...
just not the same.
Just not the same. Probably not ended well for me.
Yeah, geez. And that's a trend, isn't it? I've heard across the world that airlines consistently have seen 11 Alpha.
No, it's true. 11 Alpha was being booked out constantly for the 787.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I've heard that, hasn't there been other, I'll look this up, but there's other airlines that have had crashes or incidents where 11 Alpha has also survived.
It must be the lucky seat. I mean, my understanding was if you got into a plane crash, statistically speaking, the further back you are, the more safe you are. I don't know whether who's only heard that.
There was a...
which is weird because 11A is pretty close to the front.
Oh yeah, big time.
Well, apparently the strongest part of the aircraft is, I think it's called the wing box, where it's the structural component that connects the wings to the fuselage because of all the engineering behind that connection. So, and that's where 11 Alpha was. It's pretty much right in front of that structural component. So I don't know if that's just what... with Howard Mercer of the Force, but that one survivor, I mean, I don't know. People ask, how did it survive? I have no answers.
Looks like Thai Airways Flight 261 in 1998 one of the sole survivors was seated in 11 Alpha as well. Wow. There you go. So
11A is the seat to be in then.
It is indeed.
A lot of questions, I think, coming out of this accident. Everyone's been speculating, not on purpose, but everyone just wants answers because just bizarre. Very bizarre accident.
Very much.
Yep. First hull loss as well for a 787 Dreamliner. Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And obviously there's the insane microscope that's been placed on. Well, not insane. Probably rightfully due microscope.
And right, yeah.
Placed on the maintenance patterns of Air India.
And I'm and glad because, sorry, because for once, Boeing isn't in the spotlight now. Because usually once a Boeing plane has an incident or accident, oh, look, Boeing. No. The spotlight is on the airline now.
Exactly. In this instance, Boeing, gone.
Yeah, literally, Boeing. So Boeing's stupid. Got nothing to do with this one. They've done their jobs.
Is there no spotlight on GE? Is there no spotlight on the engine manufacturer?
I think, but not until the initial reports released, you'd have to think.
Well, yeah, we're on the 11th.
I think people can speculate and put a spotlight in speculation, but until we've got hard initial evidence, then it will be like, okay, GE, what the hell? But right now, the 90% of the microscope is on the maintenance patterns of Air India. Guys, we saw literally breaking less than 48 hours ago, a report published showing that Air India has actually had an incident a few months prior to the 787 crash where a maintenance team that was due to it was a scheduled engine part replacement. They took it into maintenance. They realized that they didn't have one on hand or in their inventory. They had to order one in from Boeing or from the engine manufacturer GE or not whoever. Sorry, not GE. Whoever the A320 engine provider is for India. Point being, they decided that it wasn't worth the loss in revenue to hold the plane in the hangar until they could get this part in, which was their own fault for not having one on inventory. Yeah, so what exactly. They did is they falsified the maintenance record and signed it off as replaced, but kept the same part in the engine post fatigue life span. Now, there wasn't an incident on the A320, but the fact that that's happened and that's now come into the limelight following what has been a devastating crash is just... It sucks that it takes something like that for these things to come out of the woodworks, but at least it is. Air India, this needs to be a huge wake-up call for their maintenance program. 100%. It really needs to be.
We'll see what the preliminary findings say as well, whether that Dreamliner that did take off from Ahmedabad had a potential... issues with its maintenance, you know, but everything now is a bit sort of speculation. But it's surprising from Air India, to be honest. This is an airline that wants to be one of the best in the world, has tried to transform itself into becoming a real hub and spoke carrier, into competing with Emirates and Qatar.
Yeah.
And so I think what I found most interesting about all this is obviously we've talked about Air India in the past few episodes of the podcast being wanting to, you know, rejuvenate themselves, wanting to be one of the biggest carriers in the world again, wanting to be a hub and spoke airline like Emirates and Qatar. And obviously they had that merger with Vistara a few years ago, which means not only are they're privatized again, so not owned by the government, so they're owned by Tata Group now, but 25% of Air India is owned by Singapore Airlines, which, as we know, is one of the leading carriers in the world. And if you listen to what Skytrax say, because Skytrax released the top 10, 50 airlines of the year, whatever, they came number two. So one of the best airlines in the world, and everyone will agree with that. You look at the parent companies, and you know the parent companies aren't bad companies at all. They're really, really, really good companies.
No, but it's like you said,
very respectable companies.
Exactly, it's like you said. The kid messes up, the parents are the ones that ultimately hold some of the responsibility. And you're right, Vistara bought by Singapore Airlines. Therefore, Singapore Airlines technically, along with Tata, as you mentioned, have partial responsibility for Air India. You'd have to think. Yeah, that's interesting.
The CEO was also from Singapore Airlines as well, so
Take
that what you will. But Yeah. Well, I mean, Christos, you were going to mention something as well about the structural integrity of Air India's Dreamliners, as we've seen through flight vloggers and that.
Just through different reviews I've seen and people I've spoken to, people tend to see, I guess, the way the aircraft is being looked after in general. Like, someone will board an Air India flight, like a 787, and see just duct tape all over the plane. North Phillips, I think, even did a review showing it. But not just
that's
him,
right.
Many reviews have shown it. So I guess there is a quick limit. There is a limit of what you can use duct tape for, I guess, just in a general sense, like a tray table, right? You're going to fix a tray table just to get it ready for the passenger, fine. But if your whole inside is full of it, I mean, come on.
Yeah, absolutely. And and it is crazy to think that India are not – are they upscaling their – it's one of the largest growth markets in the world for aviation. We know this, right? And here in Australia, post-COVID, the maintenance sector of the airline industry is booming. Hiring is at an all-time upscale. Upskilling is an all-time upscale, skill development. We have an insanely steadfast and airtight safety culture here in Australia, but we don't have the booming, insane growth within the aviation market that India have. They are an untapped oil field of aviation, and while they're upscaling the number of aircraft coming into airlines, the number of flights being run, the number of airports being built, clearly there is a shortfall in the number in the maintenance program and the upscaling of maintenance made available to airlines across India.
Yeah.
I mean, look, some aircraft, Christos, I'm sure you can explain, don't necessarily need to be fully they shouldn't be airworthy, but they need to be fully compact with every single possible thing that they could have on board to be able to function on a route,
no,
right?
So in the industry, we have what's called an MEL, minimum equipment list. So basically tells the pilots or gives an idea of what the aircraft needs to have operating for it to be serviceable, for it to be able to go on a flight. So there's definitely parts that need to be working, operating, and there's some things that, like, you know, you can fly the aircraft safely without it.
Right, right. An example of that might be an aircraft might have issues with running under its own power when it's on the ground.
Yeah, and APU. So an APU does, you can have a GP, a ground power unit, which supplies power to the aircraft on the ground. So working back at the airport, I've seen many, many planes with a GP on them. So the APU is not working, but we have something critical, like even like a lot, lights are very crucial actually. So strobe lights need to be working. Like that's surely on the minimum.
So there are critical components and less critical components. And components that can allow the aircraft to still run as long as the airport's infrastructure can allow it. So something like in Australia, if I had to give an example, Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane, near on every serviceable aircraft could fly into them because they're arterial ports. They have all the equipment necessary to keep an aircraft running or to maintain and fix small bugs with the aircraft on the ground versus sending an aircraft that might have, for instance, a power issue running on its own power on the ground into a port that's less well equipped, like, say, Hamilton Island or something like that, right?
Yep.
There'll be jets that are limited in whether or not they can fly on that route. I wonder whether the minimum equipment list is something that is insanely critical in a place like India, where you've got A320s being the primary A320s and 737s being the primary two aircraft that are flown into hundreds and hundreds of regional airports and airfields across India that are still in the process of upscaling, don't have the necessary infrastructure to be able to support aircraft with MEL issues or with minimum equipment list issues. You would have to think that it would have to be held to a higher standard, the MEL lists in India. But you see an incident like this, you see the A320 falsified maintenance records, and it makes you question whether or not that is in any way taken into account in India, which is quite it's quite worrying, to be honest. But Nick, when Nick, you were saying just before that before the podcast that the initial report for AI171 is supposed to be released soon.
Yeah, the 11th of July. Okay. What you said as well, though, I reckon the MEL's got to be pretty important in India. I mean, I think we talked about this in one of the earlier podcasts. We were sort of talking about how the initial batch of Air India A320s actually had double bogey landing gears.
That's right.
Because the runway infrastructure and the airport infrastructure at the airports were not up to muster. So they needed the additional support from the landing gear because of the surface of the runway wasn't.
Wow.
So
that's obviously a great point.
That's an overhaul thing that they're trying to do at the moment, India. Yeah, but they'll continue to do that. There was a grand master plan, I think. Don't quote me on this entirely. They wanted to have 100 sort of fully operational airports in India by 2030. I think they're on route to doing that. And obviously, Air India's going through its growth phase, and IndiGo's massive, and obviously a lot of other airlines. But I think on the topic of maintenance and MRO, I think India's really got potential to be one of the places that most airlines send their aircraft to. So obviously we know that places like Philippines are a massive engineering base. So big Lufthansa Technik over there.
A lot of
airlines send there because the quality and the standard is high and the costs are cheap because stuff like labor costs and that, they're a lot cheaper in places like the Philippines as they would be in Australia.
So yeah, it's awesome.
Down here we get airlines that send their aircraft to Singapore and Hong Kong.
We do, yeah.
For major overhauls, for CED checks. So it's down to cost. And I think India, obviously, having a lot lower labor costs than most of the Western world, Australia, US, Europe.
At a home field advantage in a way.
Correct. So they could potentially look into that as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. So it's an interesting point. So to summarize the double bogey point, so MELs, the airlines clearly already accommodated the fact that they are expecting the airport's infrastructure to be pretty under par, putting double bogey landing gear on there.
Yeah.
And then also on top of that, because of labor costs and how much more affordable they are in those areas, Air India is at an advantage to be able to home nurture or home cultivate a maintenance and engineering culture because...
don't forget also the pilots will always check what's called a maintenance release before a flight. So even at a PPL level, before I go flying, I will check the maintenance release to see what maintenance has been done, what's coming up. For example, a 50-hourly service or a 100-hourly service, if that has been done, if there's enough hours left before the service. So if I know that the service needs to be done within 2 hours... but my flight's going to take 3 hours, and then I can't go because I'm going to go over. So it's very crucial that if something was wrong in the aircraft, was it on the maintenance release, and was it checked properly, and was it listed properly? Was it even listed?
Speaking of listed, our next point is there are currently, if we had to estimate, and Christos was actually just showing this to us before, upwards of 600 to 700 aircraft listed currently in the Middle Eastern airspace corridor, but there's been major issues recently regarding airspace closures, airspace limitations as a result of the ongoing conflict in the Middle East between various countries. There's been cancellations here in Australia, trying to accommodate capacity issues. Nick, can you speak at all to the who decides how much capacity each airline has available to them when there are capacity restrictions in one single piece of airspace?
I mean, ultimately, it's the country that owns the airspace.
Yeah.
So they dictate whether their airspace is open, they dictate whether their airspace is closed, they dictate what countries' aircraft can fly over their airspace. Yep. As we've seen in Russia, most Western countries... their aircraft can't fly over Russia because of what's happening between them and Ukraine. Whereas if you look at Chinese carriers flying between from China to Europe, they can overfly Russia.
Right.
Yeah. Second of all, it's down to the airlines. It's down to the operations team. It's down to the safety team as well to determine ultimately whether it's safe to fly over a particular country.
Flight
and
planning.
And assess the risk of what's going on in that country. From a geopolitical matter. So we're seeing now, quite recently, Iran's been off limits. It comes on and off occasionally. It's been going on that like that for a while. What we saw in the past few weeks, though, was that Qatar airspace was closed for about 24 hours because of the airstrike on the US base in Qatar.
So I completely forgot that even happened. That's crazy.
Yeah, that definitely sent a bit of shockwaves through.
Yeah. So they Qatar's airspace fully closed. What? Geez, Qatar Airlines must have had a good fun time with that.
Yeah, there were a lot of aircraft in the space of about 30-40% of Qatar Airways flights were out of base.
Goodness.
That were meant to return to Doha. They had to divert to other ports because their airspace was closed. And that creates, obviously, you've got to put safety first. Safety is paramount.
Mm.
But logistically, that creates a lot of headaches. You've got aircraft that are out of base that are meant to be in other places. You've got people that are out of base that are meant to be in other places. You've got to, you know, you look at Qatar Airways. Most people that are flying Qatar Airways into Doha aren't actually going into Doha. They're going to somewhere else. So now you've got to book connections for them. And then now you've got, you know, you've got flights in the next few... It's not like the flights in the next few days are empty as well. They're booked out as well, and it's a tough one to manage. And
I'd imagine that Emirates and Etihad would be Qatar's best friend for the recovery period, trying to get downline passengers fixed and resolved. Only so many recovery flights you can put on.
You'd like to think so, that the players in the region would definitely help out. I know in Australia it's a pretty good culture around here. Obviously, you've got the rivals, but push come to shove, obviously.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, we saw what happened with Rex. They went under, and then Virgin and Qantas helped out.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'd like to think that happens elsewhere as well, particularly in that region where air travel is such a huge thing over there in terms of through travel and everything. But
let me put it to you this way then, because Ross, who can't be with us today, he's up there getting his hours, so safe flying Ross.
Mm-hmm.
He put it to us, let's completely cut out the Middle East to get to Europe.
Yeah.
So we're in Australia, Middle East, the whole Middle East is out of bounds. How do we get to Europe? What is the best way to get to Europe?
Well, Russia's out of bounds for most Western carriers, for all Western carriers. So from here to Europe, from Australia at least to Europe, I think your best bet would be to fly with a Chinese airline and fly up to Shanghai, fly up to Beijing. I mean, Australia is really well connected to China. If you look at Sydney and Melbourne in particular, there are a lot of destinations that we can fly to from here into China. We're very well connected into China, so that's not really an issue. And then we fly Chinese airline to Europe. The only reason why most people don't fly Chinese carriers is because they're not as luxurious as, say, the Middle Eastern carriers or, you know, something like
that. We've got Singapore Airlines.
But Singapore Airlines is Singaporean carrier. Yeah, Japan can't overfly Russia. Japan are a big thing. Flying from Japan to London now, for example, that's a bit of a logistical nightmare as well.
I would say going via the Pacific, either North America or South America, and then straight into Europe from there.
Yeah, I think the Pacific is the next best option. Ross mentioned going to Johannesburg and flying up. I reckon you could expand that to just Africa in general. And then fly over through Africa.
Perth? Qantas 787 via Perth, where do they go through?
Middle East.
That gets cut out as well.
Tough thing about Africa is there are some no-flies. DRC is complete no-fly at the moment, Democratic Republic of Congo, and that's right in the heart of Africa. So, but again, it's nowhere near as a ultimate problem as what would occur if that Middle Eastern corridor was shut due to ongoing wars and conflicts and stuff like that. I think that the Middle Eastern corridor right now is at a turn point, and I think slight disruptions like this are exactly the kind of thing that push airlines to run simulations on how would their network function should the airspace no longer be viable.
That would put a big nail into what our next talk will be about, a certain project.
Yes, and you know what? With that in mind, I actually get to bring back a soundbite that has long been forgotten, my friends. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to bring back the Black Box.
Black Box!
There she is. There's only one sound better.
There's an engine right there.
There is an engine right there. All right, boys. Well, we're going to do a quick touch on Project Sunrise. Look, this will likely be a two-parter. I'd love to talk about this more in episode 20 because there are more developments that are occurring as part of this. But essentially, Qantas's Project Sunrise is set to change the way we fly. The program is designed to link Australia directly to just about anywhere on Earth with no stopovers required, which is a huge change for the industry, especially when it comes to Australia. Think non-stop from Sydney to New York, Sydney to London. At the heart of this program is a fleet of ultra-long-range Airbus A350-1000 ULR ultra-long-range jets.
Designed a long plane.
Oh, big time. Big long boys. Designed for flights lasting up to 20 hours with an unprecedented focus on space, comfort and wellness.
Even 22 hours. I think Sydney to New York, Melbourne to New York, they're looking at 22 hours nonstop.
That's crazy.
That's a long
flight. There's a lot of augmented flight crew complement testing that would be done for something like that.
I know. Put a question out to you boys and to the listeners out there. You can send us a message on your Instagram, on our Instagram, not on your Instagram.
Yeah. Hey, you up?
Would you fly on Project Sunrise? Would you spend 22 hours in an aircraft, or would you rather do what we do now and have a layover?
Yeah,
I think it depends. Layover, what trip I'm doing. Do I want to stay in another country first? Do I want to experience another airport? Then I'll do the stop. But if I just want to get there, then I think I'll just go direct. What's the point in stopping?
Yeah, the other thing
potentially
is
losing your bags.
You're right. The other thing, oh, that's a really good one. The other thing I was going to say also is that with it being Qantas that's running Project Sunrise, they're a full-service carrier. So you're not foregoing any comfort features as part of a flight that's 22 hours long versus like if you were to fly with Jetstar or let's say at an absolute stretch, Scoot 22-hour flight, where there's less comfort because it's designed to be low-cost carrier. You're paying for a bare-bones seat.
The cabin specifications is going to have 140 economy seats. You've got 40 premium economy, 52 business, and then 6 first class suites.
So it's business and luxury heavy.
Yeah, it's a premium heavy aircraft, it's designed in even in economy the seat width. Well, I don't think the seat width is any different, but I know the seat pitch is definitely a lot more generous. And they've got stuff on board like a wellness zone where you can supposedly
crazy
stand there, stretch your legs, do some, you know, lunges, whatever.
Alan Joyce tested, might I add, as well. So that's a bit of fun.
Making money is actually a good thing.
I'm going to go on a limb and say this. I don't think the test was done the way it should have been done when they did the flight.
Ooh.
Because we're talking about comfort. Now, I think everyone can agree, everyone's going to be comfortable in a higher suite. Class of business premium economy, even first, but no one was sitting in economy during those 20 to 22 hours. So, and that's, we've got 140 compared to about, what was it, just over 190.
I actually think there were people sitting in economy.
Were there people sitting in economy?
There was, but they had to sit in economy to balance out the aircraft, so it wasn't front heavy.
Because I think that's what everyone's going to be comfortable in business, but how are you going to be in a normal economy seat?
I think the biggest issue was that there were people sitting in economy. I think the biggest issue was it was an empty economy.
Okay.
So you know, it's business
space
light
to move around.
It's business light. I mean, I talked about this ages ago when EK 405 404 flew through Singapore, and that was 30. I've seen that thing at 25% load factor to the point where I have gone on the plane and the cabin crew have gone, choose which of these 10 rows you want to sit on. Because they're all free and you can have them all. And you can have about 100 pillows as well. And I'm like, if I was in business class, I'd be seething if I paid that much money. And I'm sitting there in more comfort and more plush.
Yeah, you got your own personal, the apartment type setup, you know.
Literally,
my
mate.
My pilots are probably some of the most experienced pilots in the world.
But no, I do agree with you. I do agree with you on that. But you know what? There are people out there. There's a lot of people out there that just want to
get there
at the end of the day. I mean, we are the minority of people. Most people will see air travel as just travel. to be honest. Like, we don't get on a bus, for example, and suss the specs and everything.
What bus is this we're going on?
Yeah, I mean, there are people that do, and, you know, but most people, at the end of the day, will just get on a bus and get there because they want to get to their destination. Yeah. Now, that'll be the same with the that'll be the same with Project Sunrise. One thing to note about Project Sunrise, though, is that it is announced that, obviously, flying direct will command a premium in price. I think they were talking about 20-30%.
20%. If you're flying with Qantas, it's already a premium in price at a default.
Over standard fares.
But compared to stopping, it's going to be a bit more expensive, which, not going to lie,
because you
everyone expects that.
Yeah, I suppose.
I mean, if you even...
The business case will be strong for something like that. Actually, business travelers.
Now, where was it I saw? I don't think business... I'm pretty sure it was business class wasn't profitable for an airline. People think business class is profitable. No, apparently what's put into business costs more than what the return is. It's where actually, or was it premium economy? There's one of the higher class suites that don't get enough money back for what they put in.
First class,
there you go. Right. Sorry, it was first class.
And I suppose that's why first class. Oh, okay, hang on.
I want to apologize.
I think, yeah, very possibly... that could explain the phasing out of first class across around the world, except for a few notable carriers who have suddenly just launched a brand new first class suite. Look, guys, I just want to get your opinion. Qantas with Project Sunrise choosing for their long-haul international onboard Wi-Fi service to be serviced via Viasat 3 rather than via Starlink.
Now, Starlink's the way to go.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Qatar has Starlink. I found out yesterday, Hawaiian of Starlink as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Why, turning it up.
On board. So, but it makes me think, like, Viasat 3, interesting decision. I wonder if it was taken before Starlink really had broken into the market for the aviation, like, onboard Wi-Fi market maybe. But, I mean, it's been around. Sunrise has been known about for a long time. They announced it a long time ago. And there's still more developments coming as we...
Crew fatigue management's a big thing with that as well, I feel.
Yes. Crew rest is going to be important.
How many pilots are going to need rotating?
Will the return of the third officer be in play? No, probably not. Probably a second officer is all you need because you can just have two reliefs. Acting pilot in command being the first officer that steps into the command seat once the captain takes rest. But yeah. That's really all you need. It will definitely. I think it's no doubt that it'll be four pilots.
Oh, by not, minimum. Not three. Minimum.
Yeah.
Single pilot ops in a 22-hour flight.
For sure.
There's four pilot ops on a flight from Melbourne to Dubai.
Yep. There you go. Exactly.
Definitely.
Now, another thing to note with the total commercial complement on board the aircraft is that they plan to seat upwards of 238 passengers on board the A350-1000 ULR for some of these long-haul flights, given the cabin configuration. Put that into perspective, currently Jetstar operate the A321neo in Australia, and their standard commercial complement available is 232 seats. So this luxury premium business stack front heavy cabin is going to take a total of six more passengers than the capacity available to a domestic A321.
Yeah, it's low density, and so it should be, to be honest. They shouldn't be packing in as many for a flight that's that long. I mean, Singapore Airlines have A350s without any economy in it whatsoever.
Yeah.
Their ULRs only have business and premium economy in it.
Mm.
And I feel as though that's the way it's going to be if you're going to be flying that long. I mean, there are people out there, and I've said this before, there are people out there that will want to get there cheap, and they will sacrifice any comfort whatsoever if it gets them $100 off an airfare.
Yeah, that's true.
So there's going to be people out there, but I think you got to think realistically here. 22 hours in a plane.
Goodness me.
Without getting out anything. You're 22 hours in a plane, essentially in a metal tube. You want space. You want comfort. You think it's a good idea on paper, and then you'll be 14, 15 hours in. You'll realize you still got 8 hours left, the equivalent of from here to Hong Kong.
A little bit extra.
You know what? It's okay, guys, because Qantas have installed the snack cupboard with unlimited snacks in the rear of the long haul cabins now. So we're good. We're good, you know?
That's what good companies should be doing.
That's the best
charging
part.
For
that's
it.
That's the best part of a Qantas A3A, to be honest, is that you just steal all the Tim Tams, you take them back to your seat, and you gain about 5 kilos.
I had 4 perfectly chilled Coke No Sugars on board the flight back from London on the 7-8. Yeah, it was quite crazy.
That would be a good test for someone then. Book a flight from Melbourne to overseas on a 737 or an A320.
Mm.
See if you can sit there in that confined space in those seats for that long, and then, as Nick said, add another 6 hours or so, if you can handle it or not. And that will give you a good idea. All right, I'm going to have to pay more than...
Nah, most people won't. Most people want the comfort.
Yeah.
They're highly likely...
Highly likely to be a good test. Yeah, well, there you go.
But I think, this is really interesting, Project Sunrise. It's very innovative. It's a testament to show how far innovation and progress has gone into aviation beforehand. You know, we always used to... All these big flights were done by quad jets. You know, there was no such thing as ETOPS and that, so...
ETOPS. Nick, do we know what the ETOPS for the A350 is and... for the listeners,
ETOPS. 370, I think.
Yeah, please. Actually, let's get a quick download on ETOPS.
So extended twin engine operations. So it basically tells us how long an aircraft can operate on one engine. And again, guys, to listeners, aircraft are designed specifically if there is an engine failure, how long can it fly for on just one engine? And the A350 just knocks everyone out of the ballpark.
Mm, yeah.
But I think ETOPS is getting replaced now by EDTO. I think EDTO is the real...
EDTO, what's EDTO? I haven't heard of that one.
Extended Diversion Time Operations.
Oh, nice. It's just a rephrasing.
It's just a rephrasing. But I think they're trying to phase out the phrase of ETOPS, and it's going to be EDTO now. But in terms of ETOPS, A350 holds the record for having the highest ETOPS classification. I think it's something along the ballpark of just over 6 hours. So that basically means that an A350 can run with a single engine 6 hours away from any major port that it can land at. Just over. So that's over water that and that. That's why it works perfectly.
Incredible.
That's what I call an engine.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeez, these engine manufacturers, man.
Let me search this up. A350 ETOPS rating.
Yeah, good idea. Quick sidebar, cover a small...
370 minutes, so yeah. I was
370 minutes.
Just over 6 hours in one engine.
Guys, I mean, soon, with the way engine technology is going, turbine technology, we could genuinely see that EDTO might not even be a thing eventually. Could get to anywhere. Really, within like there could be no point on the globe where EDTO couldn't cover. You know what I mean?
Nah.
Yep.
Okay, there is more to cover on Project Sunrise, specifically to do with the competitors to Qantas who would potentially service the same routes. We're talking British Airways with London, some of the American carriers with New York, destinations like that. And you might be thinking, well, these are carriers, especially in the American region, that have no intention of upscaling their technology to service such insane long-haul routes. But you would be surprised. That is to be continued next week. Guys, speaking of engines, we were just talking about, let's just touch quickly on the fact that the US has reopened the gateway for GE to send their engines across to COMAC for the C919. We've spoken previously about how COMAC currently call their most commonly produced C919 the American C919 because it involves American parts. They're hoping to get everything in-house. Right now, they rely heavily on GE. And actually, to be honest, their production rates dropped during the embargoes and the tariff war between the US and China because of GE's restrictions on being able to ship across these ready-to-go engines for the COMAC. But it's back online. It's also EASA certified. We can... We'll probably see the C919 at a lot of European trade shows now. I doubt, well, we certainly haven't seen any orders from any European carriers. It's solely Chinese carriers. And to be honest, that's the intention with the COMAC anyway, is to be a Chinese carrier-oriented airline and to have airlines exclusively in China operating it, because that really is what politically suits the region, I would say.
I'm sorry to say. I'm going to say something controversial.
Yeah, go on.
The COMAC C... C919 is basically, Mum, can we have A220? Mum's like, no, we have A220 at home. And then at home is the
C1. Oh, yeah, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. Yeah. Yeah, well played. I write that.
Would you refund the government that money? Of course you won't.
All right. Well, look, that's the COMAC point. Guys, let's quickly also touch on our one of the most well-known airline reviewers, Nonstop Dan. Now, all three of you guys seen
what's I've not there? Seen that video. I've seen thumbnails. It's been something that I've been meaning to watch. This Kuwait Airways incident where he was supposedly harassed on board, and then he had a follow-up video that came out recently as well explaining the whole ordeal. So maybe you can explain that to us. Yeah. Or maybe, Chris, have you watched it?
I've seen bits and pieces.
I've watched the full saga, but honestly, it's nowhere near as big of an issue as it's been made out by Nonstop Dan. But of course, that's the thing. Airline reviewers.
It's not Josh Cahill getting banned from Qatar.
No, but anything Josh Cahill gets banned from is warranted, in my opinion. That guy is a toss, an absolute toss.
Yeah, shout out Ross. Wait, what?
Oh, yeah, toss to disco. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, go ahead. So what happened to Nonstop Dan and Kuwait Airways?
Look, essentially, he was just performing a standard airline review. He was talking about Kuwait Air's first class, which essentially was the same as... Oh, it's a very similar product to what you get in mid-tier business and all of the Arab carriers. Mm. He noted throughout the flight that the cabin manager, he was the only bloke on board, and he basically just sat there and made the other flight attendants, all the ladies do all the work. And it got to near the end of the flight, and he realized that Nonstop Dan was recording this and had noted the laziness of the cabin manager in some way, or would have. Oh, wow. And so just kicked up an absolute stink. He got the captain involved. The captain started yelling at Nonstop Dan. Police met him on arrival per request. The moment Nonstop Dan pulled out his phone and showed all the reviews and showed he hadn't disturbed anyone on board the flight, he hadn't recorded anyone but himself, he hadn't done anything that was in any way illegal, despite the cabin manager telling him, forcing a piece of paper in front of him saying, you must sign your signature here, basically trying to grab some semblance of authority over the situation. Despite that, Nonstop Dan held strong and got through to the police, and the police were like, what on earth are these Kuwait Airlines guys talking about? You're fine. You can go. It really was just that he just instantly knew he was guilty because he'd done absolutely no work and hadn't performed to an adequate standard for a cabin manager. Anyway, look, after the fact, the president of Kuwait Air actually emailed Nonstop Dan personally apologizing and basically saying in no unequivocal terms, you won't have to worry about that cabin manager anymore. Don't even worry about it. It really was just played up, I would say. You'd obviously be in a country like Kuwait, you would be worried if you had police meeting you at the gate, and you'd be glad you're only connecting through rather than stopping in the country. His safety was apparently threatened. He claimed that if you don't sign this piece of paper waiving the right to use that footage, I can't guarantee your safety once you get off the aircraft. Is something that was said.
It's just some blackmail.
Not great at all.
Shows the professionalism as well.
You can't
pin it on the airline though. I think cabin crew, cabin managers, whatnot. They are the face of the airline ultimately, but you can't pin from what it sounds like from his review. Obviously, it's the cabin manager being a bit of a dictator.
Yeah,
dictating the play, not doing any work. It's just palming off the work and. Got caught out, got a bit worried, because as we know, airlines around that region are a bit trigger happy.
Bit touch and go.
You know, look at Qatar Airways. You do one thing wrong and that's it. Bye bye. There's no remorse, nothing. They're a bit trigger happy. They're not afraid to let you go if you do something wrong.
Yes. Yeah. No, but you're right. That whole region is sort of known for that, really. Known for having a very touchy it's a touchy subject to talk about with the security-wise and all the rest of it. So, yes. Can't say I expected much else from them. For those of you wondering, with our planning document for each episode, we open it up to the floor in our podcasting planning group. Our good friend, Toss Tedisca, Who, for those of you...
Good friends of stretch, exactly. But
now, he hasn't been here for a while, and I'll let him decide when to tell you, the listeners, as to what he's been up to, but he has been very busy, let me tell you, and he's often engaged in what is a
the
pretty...
Camost website.
And, yeah, you know, mate.
Buying models and...
Our good friends at Camost, we mentioned in the segment earlier as a sponsorship... yeah, they've been kept well in business by this unemployed gentleman named Ross Tedisca. But look, he's been working hard, supposedly, allegedly, in his next career move, which we can't talk to, but you'll all have found out eventually from him himself when he's on. He actually got onto our planning document this week and he went absolutely nuts. And look, I'll read some of the slightly more savoury... We'll read some of the slightly more savoury twists he put on some of our planning intentions. Here we go. So, Nonstop Dan, Kuwait Airways situation. Airline apologises for... that's something he has to say. I might leave some of these out. I'll leave this one out. AI-171 crash... Yeah. European and Arab airspace restrictions.
We're going to need to have a chat.
Yeah.
We need to have a sit down.
Here's one that I can include. He wrote the COMAC engine acceptance. COMAC allowed to receive GE90 engines after Trump.
Just put the cock on top of the engine.
Air India Express falsified maintenance records on the A320 part change, claiming they actually conduct maintenance on their planes. That's a good rephrase. Thanks, Ross. Appreciate it. Yeah, so he does try to keep it active in the planning. As you can tell, great contributions from our friend Ross.
Yeah,
so.
He's a behind-the-scenes man nowadays.
He is indeed.
Too cool for us. He's obviously moved up in terms of friendship groups, but that's all right.
But I can guarantee he's going to be able to flex on us the most in the short period to come. We're all screwed.
It'll be interesting. Right. It's an interesting time, you know, 2025, eh? Lots happening. And every, you know what? This episode will end, and when it ends, something else crazy in the aviation industry will happen, and we'll be back here in a couple of weeks.
It just means that we can come together a bit more and create more podcasts.
Absolutely. And I'm sure the listeners won't be mad about that. I'm certainly not mad about that.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll pick up with another episode in a couple of weeks. And till next time, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Catch you later.